Welcome back to Claw Talks. I'm Emma.
And I'm Ryan. Today we're doing something a little different. This is a full-length episode, and we're going deep.
Really deep, because the topic deserves it. We're talking about finding a new job, writing your CV, surviving and actually thriving in interviews.
And before you think, oh, another career advice podcast, let me stop you right there. We're going to spend a lot of time on what actually works versus what feels like progress.
Because those two things are very different. And I say that as someone who went through a full job search about 18 months ago. I did a lot of things that felt productive and were completely useless.
And I say it as someone who's been on the hiring side. I've reviewed hundreds of CVs, done more interviews than I can count, and made hiring decisions. So we're bringing both perspectives.
All right, let's start with some numbers. Because I want to hit you with a few statistics that might genuinely change how you think about this.
Go ahead. Set the scene.
Okay. Somewhere between 70 and 80% of jobs are filled through networking or referrals. Not job boards. Not LinkedIn applications. Through people.
That number always shocks people the first time they hear it. But when you think about how hiring actually works, it makes complete sense.
Right. Because if you're a hiring manager and someone you trust says, "Hey, I know a great person for this role," you're going to talk to that person before you post anything publicly.
Often the job posting is almost an afterthought. The internal candidate is already half decided before the ad goes live.
Which brings us to statistic number two. The average job posting receives 250 applications.
250. That's a lot of competition.
And here's where it gets worse. Most of those CVs, and I mean most, like the majority, are never read by a human being.
Because of applicant tracking systems. OTS. We'll talk about these a lot today.
Basically software that filters applications before a human ever sees them. And if your CV doesn't have the right keywords in the right format, it's gone. Silently rejected. Nobody tells you.
And then the ones that do make it through? An average recruiter scans a CV for 6 to 7 seconds before deciding whether to read further or move on.
6 seconds. That's roughly the time it takes to say, "Hi, I'm a results-driven professional with a passion for excellence."
Which is exactly the kind of line that gets you rejected in those 6 seconds.
So we've got a situation where most jobs aren't on job boards, most applications are auto-rejected, and the ones that aren't get 6 seconds of attention. That's the landscape. And somehow people are surprised when their search takes months.
It's not a reflection of your worth. It's a reflection of a broken system that you need to understand before you can navigate it effectively.
Exactly. So let's talk about how to navigate it. Starting with the most important thing, the job search strategy itself.
And the number one thing, before we talk about any platform or tool, is networking. Genuine relationship maintenance. Not schmoozing. Not going to conferences and handing out business cards.
Real networking is just staying connected to the people you've worked with. And most people are terrible at this when they don't need it, and then try to activate it desperately when they do.
Which is exactly the wrong approach. If the first time you reach out to someone in 3 years is to ask for a job lead, that's awkward for everyone.
It's uncomfortable to receive, too. I've been on that end. Someone I hadn't spoken to since a previous company reaches out, and it's immediately clear they want something.
Whereas genuine networking is just staying warm. Commenting on someone's LinkedIn post. Sending a quick message saying, "So this article, thought of you." Grabbing a coffee when you're in the same city.
And then when you are looking, the outreach feels natural because the relationship already exists.
So the practical advice here is, don't wait until you need a job to maintain your network. Do it now. All the time. It's a muscle.
And if you're already in a search and your network has gone cold, it's not too late, it's just harder. Be honest. "Hey, I'm looking for something new. I'd love to reconnect and hear what you've been up to." People generally respect directness.
Now let's talk about LinkedIn specifically. Because I see a huge misuse of it. Most people treat LinkedIn like a static CV archive. They update it when they change jobs and then forget it exists.
Right. And then when they're job searching, they suddenly go from zero activity to applying for 30 jobs at once, And recruiters see that spike and it's a red flag.
LinkedIn is actually a networking platform masquerading as a job board. The value isn't in the job listings, it's in the connections and the visibility.
If you post occasionally, even once or twice a month, about something relevant to your field, you stay visible. Recruiters who look at your profile see recent activity. Former colleagues see your name. It works.
And you can use LinkedIn for warm outreach in a really specific way. I saw that your company posted a role in X. I'd love to have a 15-minute call to learn more about the team. That message works. Submitting the form doesn't.
The warm outreach versus cold apply thing is so important and so underused. A personalized message to the right person almost always beats a generic application into a black hole.
Because you're creating a conversation instead of joining a pile.
Let's talk about job boards, because people will use them and they should. They're not useless, but in priority order.
So LinkedIn is actually good for jobs, not just networking, because of the network effect. You can see if you have connections at the company. You can see who posted the job. You can message them.
Indeed is the biggest job aggregator globally. Good for breadth. Search by keyword and location and set up alerts so you're not constantly hunting.
If you're in the DACH region, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, XING is still very relevant, especially in Germany and Austria. A lot of companies post there that don't bother with LinkedIn.
And for Switzerland specifically, jobs.ch is huge. Swiss employers take it seriously. If you're searching in Switzerland, you need to be on jobs.ch.
And then there's company career pages. Often underused. If you have a list of companies you'd love to work for, check their careers page directly. Sometimes roles are posted there before they hit the aggregators.
Which brings us to something called the hidden job market. This is real, and it's bigger than most people think.
The idea is that many roles, especially at the senior level, are filled before they're ever publicly posted. Someone inside the company knows someone. A recruiter reaches out proactively. A former employee comes back. The posting is a formality.
How do you get access to that hidden market? You become visible to the companies before the need arises.
Follow companies you want to work for on LinkedIn. Interact with their content, not just likes, but thoughtful comments. Follow their leaders. You start to appear in their ecosystem.
And then the proactive outreach piece. I'm a big fan of what I call the target list approach. You sit down and you identify 20 to 30 companies you would genuinely love to work for. Not random companies, companies you've researched and chosen.
And then you approach them systematically. Not all at once. Staggered over a few weeks. With personalized messages to relevant people, hiring managers, department heads, maybe even founders at smaller companies.
I've been following your company for a while. I'm particularly interested in the work you're doing on X. I have a background in Y and I'd love to explore whether there might be a fit, now or in the future.
And then you get a conversation, which is infinitely better than a job application form.
Now let's talk about recruiters. Because people either over-rely on them or completely dismiss them, and the reality is more nuanced.
Recruiters are most useful at the senior level, in specialized fields, and when you're making a significant career move. If you're a senior software engineer or a CFO looking for your next role, working with good specialist recruiters makes a lot of sense.
Because they have relationships with companies that aren't publicly hiring. They're the bridge to that hidden job market in specific sectors.
How to work with them well, be specific about what you want. The more clear you are, company size, industry, role type, compensation range, the easier you make their job, and the more likely they are to bring you relevant opportunities.
And follow up. Recruiters are juggling dozens of candidates. A polite check-in once every couple of weeks is fine. More than that and you become annoying. Less and you get forgotten.
One more thing on timelines. And I want to say this clearly, the average senior job search takes 3 to 6 months. That's not a failure, that's reality.
And one of the worst things you can do is panic at month 2 and accept the first offer that comes along just to make it stop. I've seen people do that and end up miserable within 6 months.
Treat the search like a project with a runway. If you can, build up savings before you leave your current role. If you're searching while employed, which is ideal, protect your energy and be patient.
Okay, let's move on to CVs, because this is where so many people spend enormous effort on the wrong things.
The ATS problem is real and it's the first thing to address. Most companies with more than a few hundred employees use some kind of applicant tracking system. Your CV goes in, gets passed by software, and gets scored before a human ever touches it.
So if you have tables, fancy graphics, columns, text boxes, unusual fonts, a lot of that is invisible to the ATS. It just sees a jumbled mess. Or nothing at all.
The safest CV format for ATS is single column, clean, standard fonts like Arial or Calibri, no headers and footers with critical info, no text boxes, no logos. And send it as a PDF unless the employer specifically asks for Word.
Even though PDFs look better, some older ATS systems still struggle with them, but most modern ones handle PDF fine, and PDF preserves your formatting, so PDF is usually the right call.
On length, for most roles, 2 pages maximum. If you're mid-career, 1 page might leave out too much. If you're very senior with 30 years of experience, maybe 2.5. But 2 is the standard.
Now here's the keyword piece. And I want to be really clear, this isn't about stuffing keywords. It's about mirroring the language of the job description naturally.
If the job description says project management and your CV says managing projects, a dumb ATS might not match those. Use their language.
Read the job description carefully. Pull out the key skills, tools, methodologies they mention. Make sure those appear in your CV, if you actually have them, in natural sentences.
Not a keyword dump at the bottom. Woven into your experience descriptions. Led cross-functional project management for a team of 12 using agile methodology, that's natural and it hits keywords.
Let's talk about the summary section. At the top of your CV, this is prime real estate and most people waste it.
Results-driven professional with a passion for excellence and a proven track record of success. That tells me absolutely nothing. I see that on 100 CVs a day.
Your summary should be 3 to 4 lines. It should be tailored to the specific role. It should contain something specific. Product manager with 8 years building B2B SaaS products. Most recently scaled a team from 3 to 20 engineers while taking a product from 0 to 2 million ARR.
That's a summary. That's something memorable. That's something I'm going to keep reading.
And tailor it every time. Yes, every time. It takes 20 minutes. And it's the biggest unlock in the whole CV process.
The experience section is where most CVs fall apart. People describe their job duties, what they were supposed to do, rather than their achievements, what they actually did.
Responsible for customer success operations. That tells me what your job was. Reduce customer churn by 30% over 12 months by implementing a proactive health scoring system. That tells me what you're worth.
Quantify everything you possibly can. Revenue, cost savings, team size, percentage improvements, time saved. Numbers make achievements concrete and believable. They also differentiate you from the other 249 people who had a similar job title.
And if you're in a role where the outputs are hard to quantify, creative fields, policy, education, think harder. How many people did your initiative reach? What was the budget you managed? How long did the project take compared to the previous one?
There's almost always a number somewhere. Find it.
Now let's talk about the Lebenslauf, the German and Swiss CV convention. Because if you're applying in DACH, there are some real differences from the UK or US norm.
In Switzerland and Germany, a photo is expected. Not optional, expected. It should be a professional headshot. Not a selfie, not a holiday photo crop to show your face.
Date of birth is often included. Nationality, marital status. These vary, but they're more accepted than in the US or UK, where including them would be unusual.
The format is very structured. Very chronological. Swiss and German employers in particular appreciate a clean, well-organized document that's easy to scan.
And the Anschreiben, the cover letter. Even when companies say it's optional in DACH, it's often not really optional. German-speaking hiring managers often use the cover letter to assess your written communication skills and your motivation.
Treat it as required unless you have a strong signal that it genuinely isn't. And write it properly, not a rehash of your CV, but a narrative about why this company, this role, this moment.
Your LinkedIn profile also needs to align with your CV. I've seen hiring managers pull up LinkedIn during an interview to cross-reference. If the dates don't match, if you've inflated a title, if there's a role on your CV that's not on LinkedIn, you've got a problem.
And LinkedIn is its own discovery channel. Recruiters search LinkedIn independently of your applications. Having a complete, well-written profile with recommendations and skills endorsements makes you more findable.
Get recommendations. Actual text recommendations from former managers, clients, colleagues. They're worth a lot more than self-endorsed skills.
And post occasionally. Not constantly, occasionally. Even once a month. Something relevant to your field. A lesson learned, a book you found useful, a comment on an industry trend. Visibility matters.
Now what kills CVs? Let me go through the big ones.
Typos. Obviously. But people still do it. Spell check is not enough. Read it out loud. Have someone else read it.
Generic objective statements. We talked about those. Cut them or replace them with a real summary.
Job hopping without explanation. If you have 3 roles in 2 years, that's a red flag unless you explain it. Contract roles, restructuring, company closure, legitimate reasons. But you need to name them.
Gaps without context. A 6-month gap is fine. A gap you don't explain is concerning. Career break, travel and personal development is better than silence.
Skill sections that are just buzzwords. Microsoft Office, communication, teamwork, leadership. That's filler. If you have a skills section, make it specific and relevant. Programming languages. Tools. Methodologies.
All right, let's get into the contrarian section. The stuff that most career advice gets completely wrong.
This is my favorite part. Starting with the passion myth.
Follow your passion. It's the most common career advice in the world, and I think it's genuinely harmful.
The research doesn't support it. Cal Newport wrote a whole book about this, So Good They Can't Ignore You, and his argument is that passion doesn't precede mastery. It follows it.
Meaning, you don't find your passion and then get good at it. You get really good at something rare and valuable, and the passion grows from the mastery, the autonomy, and the recognition that comes with it.
Telling someone to follow their passion when they're 23 and have never worked in anything is advice that can only lead to paralysis. Most people don't know what they're passionate about until they've done things.
So instead of asking, what am I passionate about? Ask what skills would be genuinely valuable in the market, that I could get really good at, that overlap with things I find somewhat interesting.
That's a much more actionable question. And the passion tends to emerge as you develop the skill.
Next contrarian point, the interview preparation paradox. Most people prepare for interviews by memorizing answers to common questions. Tell me about a time you showed leadership, and they've got a script.
And that's exactly wrong. Interviews don't hire the person with the best answers. They hire the person they want to work with. The interview is a social audition, not a quiz.
I've hired people whose technical answers were not the strongest but who I immediately trusted, liked, and thought could navigate ambiguity. And I've passed on people with perfect star answers who felt robotic.
The preparation should be for a conversation, not for a performance. Know your stories well enough that you can tell them naturally, in different ways, in response to different questions. Not recite them.
Active listening in an interview is probably the most underrated skill. Most candidates are so focused on what they're going to say next that they barely hear the question.
And interviewers notice that. They feel like they're talking to someone who's not really there.
Another contrarian take. Credentials matter much less than people think. Once you're past a certain threshold, once you've established that you're broadly competent for a role, adding more certifications, more degrees, more titles rarely changes the outcome.
Beyond a threshold, the best qualified candidate on paper almost never gets the job. The hiring decision is made on interpersonal fit, narrative coherence, and confidence.
Narrative coherence is interesting. Your career needs to make sense as a story. The hiring manager needs to be able to follow a thread. Why did you go from X to Y? Why does this role make sense as your next move?
If you can tell that story clearly and compellingly, you're ahead of 90% of candidates regardless of your credentials.
The culture fit excuse is one that deserves a hard look. It's used legitimately, genuinely ensuring someone will thrive in a particular environment. But it's also used as cover for homophily, hiring people who look and think like the existing team.
If you get rejected for culture fit without any clear explanation, it may not be about you at all. It may be about a team that's not ready to diversify its thinking.
And as a candidate, culture fit should be a two-way evaluation. You should be assessing whether you fit the culture too. Ask specifically, what does culture fit mean to you? What kind of people thrive here? What kind of people have left?
Those questions tell you a lot. If the interview can't answer them, that's information.
And salary negotiation. This one I feel strongly about. Almost nobody negotiates. Almost everybody should.
The data is clear. The vast majority of employers make an initial offer that is not their ceiling. They expect some negotiation. When you accept without negotiating, you often leave 5, 10, 15% on the table.
And the fear of seeming greedy or jeopardizing the offer, it almost never plays out that way. A company that retracts an offer because you asked a polite question about compensation is a company you don't want to work for.
The script is simple. I'm really excited about this role and I'm confident I can contribute significantly. Based on my research and experience, I was hoping for something closer to X. Is there flexibility on the compensation?
That's not aggressive. That's professional. And it almost always results in at least a conversation, often an improved offer.
Even if you can't move the base salary, you can often negotiate on sign-on bonus, equity, additional vacation days, remote working flexibility, or training budgets.
There are more levers than just base salary. Know what you want before you get to that conversation.
All right, let's go deep on interviews. Because this is where the job is won or lost and there's so much more to it than people realize.
Let's start with before the interview, the prep.
Research. Real research. Not just reading the company's homepage. Look at their annual report if they have one, or their last funding announcement if they're a startup. Read recent news articles. Look at their product or service as a user if you can.
Look up everyone you're meeting on LinkedIn before the conversation. Know what they've worked on. Know if they've written anything. You can reference it in the interview naturally. I saw you wrote about X last year. I found that really interesting.
That level of preparation signals genuine interest. And genuine interest is the single most powerful thing you can bring to an interview.
Prepare 5 questions that demonstrate you've thought deeply. Not what does the company do? The answer to that is on the website. Questions like, you're expanding into a new segment. How are you thinking about the go-to-market? Or, what's the biggest challenge the team has faced in the last year?
Questions that show you've done homework and that you're thinking about actually doing the job, not just getting it.
Prepare your stories with the STAR method. Situation, task, action, result. But practice telling them conversationally, not formally. And have specific numbers for the result whenever possible.
And prepare your tell me about yourself. This is the most common opening question in every interview and it's surprisingly easy to get wrong.
The ideal answer is 2 to 3 minutes. It's broadly chronological. It starts somewhere meaningful, not birth, and it ends with why this role, right now. It's a setup for the rest of the conversation.
Practice it until you can deliver it naturally in different lengths. Sometimes you'll have 5 minutes. Sometimes the interview will cut you off at 90 seconds. Be adaptable.
Know your numbers before you walk in. What's your salary expectation? What's your notice period? What are you leaving behind and why? These questions will come up and fumbling them looks unprepared.
Now, during the interview. The first 5 minutes are disproportionately important. The human brain makes strong first impressions very quickly and they're hard to shift.
The interview starts in the lobby. The way you interact with the receptionist. Your energy when you walk in. Your body language while you wait. Some interviewers deliberately have a colleague watch how candidates treat support staff.
Energy is contagious. If you walk in nervous and flat, you'll pull the energy of the room down. If you walk in warm and engaged, it lifts the conversation.
Eye contact. Not staring, natural eye contact. In a video interview, look at the camera when you're speaking, not at your own face on the screen.
Listen. Actually listen. Most candidates, and I've been on both sides of this, are preparing their next answer while the interview is still talking. You miss things. You answer a slightly different question than what was asked.
Interviewers notice when you actually heard them. A good technique. When the question ends, pause for 2 seconds. Then answer. Feels slow to you, but it looks confident and thoughtful to them.
Ask clarifying questions. Before I answer, can I check what you mean by X, or could you give me a bit more context on that? This is completely fine and actually signals that you're careful and precise.
Address the elephant early. If there's something in your background that might look awkward, a gap, a short tenure, a career pivot, bring it up yourself before they have to ask.
I know you might be wondering about the gap in 2024. I was dealing with a family health situation, which is now resolved, and it actually clarified what I want from my next role. Confident, clear, forward-looking.
Much better than waiting to be cornered by the question at an awkward moment.
On the salary question during the interview, try to delay it if you can. I'm still learning about the full scope of the role. Can we come back to that later? Is a perfectly acceptable response.
The later you discuss salary, the more leverage you have, because they've already decided they like you. Early in the process, you have less information and less bargaining power.
If you're forced to give a number, anchor high within the reasonable range. It's much easier to come down than to come up.
Watch for red flags during the interview too. Remember, you're assessing them as much as they're assessing you.
A hiring manager who can't clearly describe what the role involves. An interview who's late or disorganized with no acknowledgement or apology. Anyone who speaks badly about former employees or the previous person in the role.
Those are signals. Vagueness about growth path. Oh, we'll figure it out, is a signal. A company that won't discuss compensation at all at any stage is a signal.
The interview is your chance to gather intelligence. Use it.
Let's talk about different types of interviews because they require different preparation.
Competency or behavioral interviews are the most common. Tell me about a time you, a STAR method. Specific stories with specific results. Have at least 6 to 8 stories ready that can flex to different questions.
Case interviews, common in consulting and strategy roles. These are a different beast. The trick is to structure your thinking out loud before you dive in. State your hypothesis. Ask for data. Think systematically, not intuitively.
The interview is evaluating your process, not your conclusion. If you get to the right answer through a messy approach, that's worse than getting to a reasonable answer through a clear, structured approach.
Technical interviews, engineering, data, finance. Same principle, think out loud. Ask clarifying questions. The interviewer wants to see how you solve problems, not just whether you know the answer.
If you get stuck, say so. I'm not sure about the exact syntax here, but my approach would be. That's so much better than silence or pretending.
Culture fit or values interviews. I know we talked about the dark side of culture fit, but these interviews exist and you have to navigate them.
Be genuine. This sounds obvious, but the temptation to tell people what they want to hear is strong. If the culture genuinely doesn't match who you are, that's important information.
Misrepresenting yourself to get through a culture fit interview results in a job you'll hate within 3 months. The mismatch will emerge, and it's usually unpleasant for everyone.
After the interview, this is where most candidates drop the ball completely.
Send a thank you email within 24 hours. Not a generic thanks for your time. Something specific. I really enjoyed our conversation about the product direction, particularly the discussion on X. It reinforced my excitement about the role.
Most candidates don't do this. The ones who do stand out. Full stop.
If you don't hear back within the timeline they gave you, follow up once. Politely. I wanted to check in. I remain very interested and I'm happy to provide any additional information. That's it.
Once. Then let it go. Anything more becomes pressure, and pressure makes people uncomfortable.
Do a personal debrief after every interview. What went well? What felt off? What question caught you off guard? Write it down. You'll do better next time.
Every interview is a learning opportunity, even if you don't get the role. Pattern match over time. If you're getting to final stages but not getting offers, that tells you one thing. If you're getting rejected at the CV stage, that tells you something very different.
Okay, let's talk about practical action, the so what. Someone's listening to this and thinking, all right, I need to start my search. What do I actually do?
Week 1 action plan. I'll make it concrete.
Day 1. Update your LinkedIn profile. Not just the current role, make sure everything is current, your summary is strong, your skills are listed, and your profile photo is professional.
Day 2. Refresh your CV achievements, not duties. Summary tailored to the type of role you're targeting. Clean format, no tables. 2 pages max.
Day 3 and 4. Build your target company list. 20 to 30 companies you genuinely want to work for. Research each one briefly. Understand what they do, why they're interesting to you, what kind of roles they hire for.
Day 5. Reach out to 5 former colleagues. Not asking for jobs. Just reconnecting. Hey, I'm thinking about my next move. Would love to hear what you've been up to. Maybe grab a coffee.
And set up job alerts on the key platforms, LinkedIn, Indeed, and whatever is most relevant to your market. So you're not hunting every day, but you see new listings when they appear.
The mindset piece matters enormously. Job searching is a skill. And like all skills, it improves with practice. Your first interview will be worse than your fifth. Your fifth will be better than your first.
Treat each application, each conversation, each interview as a data point, not a pass or fail. What did you learn?
Track everything. This sounds boring, but it's essential. A spreadsheet with company, role, date applied, contact name, status, notes. When you have 15 things in flight, which you should, it gets confusing fast.
Without a tracking system, you'll follow up twice or not at all, or forget the name of the person you spoke to. The tracking system is your project management tool.
Energy management is huge. If you're searching while employed, which is the best position to be in financially, job searching on top of a full-time job is exhausting.
Don't try to do it in 5-minute windows throughout the day. Block specific time. Maybe Tuesday and Thursday evenings, Saturday mornings. Dedicated time where you're focused.
The fragmented approach means nothing gets proper attention. You're half present in your job and half present in your search, and you're doing both badly.
The rejection reframe. This is important. Rejection is a normal part of the process. Almost everyone who has ever found a great job has also been rejected many, many times.
Every rejection is data. If you're being rejected at the CV stage, look at your CV. If you're being rejected after first interviews, look at your interview preparation and your story. If you're reaching final stages and not getting offers, think about what's happening in those late conversations.
Pattern matching over rejections is more useful than spiraling over any individual one. One rejection tells you almost nothing. 10 rejections is a pattern with information.
And sometimes the rejection is about factors entirely outside your control. The role was filled internally. The budget was cut. They promoted someone. None of that is about you.
Okay, let's synthesize. We've covered a lot of ground. Where do we each land?
I'll go first. My big take is that the job search is essentially a product launch. You are the product. The hiring manager is the customer. And the principles of good marketing apply.
Say more.
You need to know your target audience, which companies, which roles, which hiring managers. You need a clear value proposition. What makes you different? What specific problems can you solve? You need multiple channels, networking, direct outreach, job boards, recruiters. And you need to iterate. Look at what's working, change what isn't.
That framing actually helps a lot with the emotional side too. Because a product launch that doesn't immediately succeed isn't a failure. It's a learning opportunity. You adjust the message, the targeting, the channel.
Exactly. you depersonalize it enough to be strategic about it while still bringing genuine human warmth to the conversations.
My take is a bit more personal. The networking piece is the hardest for a lot of people, especially introverts, which includes me, because it feels like asking for favors or being fake.
And yet it's real. The numbers are real. 70 to 80%. You can't argue with that.
You can't. So my advice to introverts specifically is, reframe what networking means. It's not going to events and working a room. It's having one genuine conversation with one person you actually know.
One at a time.
One at a time. And the job board isn't useless, but it's a lottery. You're one of 250. Whereas a warm outreach conversation puts you in a completely different league.
On the tailoring question, I know we have a mild disagreement here. I think every application should be tailored. Full stop.
And I think there's a practical case for some volume when you're targeting the right tier of roles. Not blanket applying, you still need a solid base CV. But you can't spend 4 hours tailoring every application.
20 minutes per application. That's my line. 20 minutes of smart tailoring moves you from generic pile to considered candidate. 4 hours is too much. 20 minutes isn't.
I'll take that. 20 minutes.
The thing I want people to take away from this whole episode is, the job market is not a neutral meritocracy. Knowing that doesn't mean you're cynical, it means you can play it effectively.
Understand the system. Work the system. And don't take the broken parts of the system personally.
Know your worth. Negotiate. Don't accept the first thing out of desperation. A bad job taken in panic is often worse than the uncertainty of continuing to search.
And invest in yourself as a candidate. Your CV, your interview skills, your ability to network. These are learnable skills. You will get better. The first search is always the hardest.
All right. That's a wrap on today's episode of Claude Talks.
This was a big one. We covered the full arc, the statistics, the job search strategy, CVs and ATS, the contrarian takes, a deep interview guide, and the practical week one plan.
If you found this useful, share it with someone who's in a search right now. It might genuinely help them.
We'll be back with more episodes soon. Until then, good luck out there. And remember, the job board is the slow lane. Get off it.
Take care, everyone.